Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the Star Wars Canon Timeline Podcast.
And the Lorehound Star Wars Podcast. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia. And today we're wrapping up our Twin Acolyte premiere breakdowns with a deep dive into episode 2, Justice/Revenge. So, John, of these first 2 episodes, which is the light side twin and which is the dark side twin?
The answer is yes.
My answer is no, neither. Listeners, for this crossover podcast series, we'll be following the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast spoiler rules. So we might mention characters from later or vaguely reference well-known events from later in the timeline for those who know those stories, but we promise not to spoil any of the big twists or story arcs to come.
You already got to practice bleeping me once in episode 1, Alicia. But don't worry, spoiler lovers. We'll have a couple episodes for subscribers only this season where Alicia and I will go deeper into how the events of this new era connect with events later in the timeline. More on that in the coming weeks.
We also have a small separate section after our episode breakdown this time to discuss speculation based on trailers. We're partitioning that off for those of you who like to avoid that information. We'll warn you before we get into that, and I'll add timestamps in the show notes to let you know when that happens and when it's over.
For these first 2 episodes, we're releasing the episode on all feeds at the same time. Starting next week, subscribers will get access about 1 day before the episodes hit the public.
This is also true for the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast feed, which will follow the same schedule. I'm setting up the Canon Padawan Supercast now, but I will include a link already in the show notes, as well as the usual Lorehounds link, and next week, tell you a bit more about what's included.
At the end of this episode, we'll also talk more about what's going on the Lorehounds feed and the rest of the network this Hot Lore summer. Check the link tree in the notes for links to all, including our lively Discord, where we're deep in Acolyte discussion.
And for the record, this conversation was recorded June 7th, 2024. And John, before we get into the episode, we have to address one controversy from the first episode that is blowing up Twitter, which is, we talked about the fact that Osha was startled by a fire in space, but we just ignored the fire in space part.
Stop yourselves, Twitter. This is Star Wars. Get over it. There's been explosions and loud nonsense in space where that's impossible forever. There's hyperspace. Just stop yourself.
Yeah, I just have to say, for this podcast in general, anyone who hasn't listened to the Young Jedi Adventures episode, I went through a theory posited by someone on Reddit that there is air in Star Wars space. They provided ample evidence and they convinced me, and I'm just not going to worry about it anymore. Not that I did in the first place, but I'm just going to ignore sounds and fires and other weirdness in Star Wars space because it's a fantasy.
Yeah, it is space fantasy.
Let's get into episode two of this space fantasy, or should we say space mystery? We set up the show and gave our spoiler-free hot takes and our breakdown of episode one. So let's just jump right into episode two and full spoiler effects for any Star Wars event up to this point in the timeline, 132 BBY. So episode two is titled Revenge/Justice, and the writers were Jason McAuliffe and Charmaine Degratte. I'm more familiar with Degratte's work. She's, Hot Lore Summer crossover. She is the, I guess, it seems like main writer on season one of House of the Dragon.
Oh, interesting. I mean, that's prestigious.
Hey, Star Wars is also prestigious.
I know. But see, here's the thing. House of the Dragon is known for its writing particularly. And I don't think Star Wars has ever, including in the original trilogy, been known for its high quality dialogue and whatnot.
Right. I actually think, I mean, people were complaining about stiltedness in the dialogue of this show, but I think that a lot of those were bad faith complaints.
I think the dialogue in this show is better than 77. And I think most modern Star Wars has better dialogue than the original Star Wars movie. George Lucas was notably terrible at writing dialogue. His wife had to tell him, like, you got to change this, George.
Right.
And I mean, Harrison Ford said you can write this bleep, but you can't say it.
Yeah. Well, it's also to bring up something more accurate, we won't spoil plot points because it's later in the timeline. But Ahsoka, this bothered you more than me. But I think the dialogue is better in this than Ahsoka even. And that was just, I don't know, last year.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so. And obviously different teams. But I think if you have a hot D writer, we're in a good spot for dialogue. Right. Hot D, I mean, the whole Game of Thrones universe, Song of Ice and Fire, is known for having those really impactful lines, the one-liners.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think this was having some of that, at least.
Right.
And not that you necessarily need to do that in Star Wars. I don't think that's what Star Wars is, really. But
there are lines that live on, and I think this show could produce some of them.
Well, I've got a bad feeling about that, but I think that this is a universe, not a genre, and it's okay to have different tones for different shows.
Right. I agree. The director of this episode was, again, Leslie Headland, the showrunner. So jumping into the plot summary, we start with the sleeping sensei. So with the help of another local child, Mei disarms a guard droid and sneaks into the Jedi outpost on the planet of Olega, where she finds a Jedi master named Torben, played by Dean Charles Chapman, floating in midair meditation 10 years into a Barash vow that he has taken to the extreme. Mei issues the same challenge she gave Indara, to which he, of course, doesn't respond, and then tries to attack him, but is prevented by a powerful force bubble protecting him. When another Jedi enters the room to check on a noise, she gives up for the moment. So we've got another new planet, Olega, a Jedi outpost. Just a reminder that at this point in the timeline, Jedi do still have satellite temples, but they've long since pulled out of the Outer Rim, which is where Young Jedi Adventures was set.
Mm. How long ago was Young Jedi Adventures before this?
100 years before this.
Okay. All right. So they're done. They're donezo, as the kids say. Did you know that Torben is Tommen from Game of Thrones?
We'll talk about trailers later, but I did see him in the trailer. So, yes.
I was like, what? With a beard, he was completely unrecognizable. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I would not have known that that's who that was if I hadn't seen him looking differently.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm trying fair to enough. Be, yeah, respectful of the people who are like, I don't want to know about trailers.
Yeah. Anyway, I was just like, wait, what? didn't expect him to be there. But I mean, I thought this was such a cool scene, how he's just chilling. He doesn't even blink. He doesn't flinch at all. It doesn't look like he's struggling to fight her back. He's just like, I am safe within the Force. And that's super cool. That feels very Jedi to me. That feels very much in line with those teachings, is I don't need to fight. You can't hurt me.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think that actually, now that you bring it up, that is sort of what the Sith, or sorry, I don't mean to assume Sith, what the person in the smiley mask is saying. It's there. Mm-hmm. They're basically saying you have to break through this bubble where they think they're protected by, or the Sith way is to somehow creep from within it, you know, and destroy it from the inside.
Right.
What did you think of the production design? I loved that Olega had this sort of, I noticed there's a lot of Art Deco influences in the High Republic architecture. And I saw that here. This was like an industrial Art Deco setting.
Yeah. I mean, something that was sticking out to me throughout this whole couple episodes was that the High Republic looks a lot cleaner and higher tech almost than the later timeline. And it's interesting because I could see why much further later, closer to the Y in the BPY.
The original film.
I would see why things would have deteriorated by then, but it doesn't really make sense to me why things deteriorated so much before even the prequels.
I mean, I guess this is part of what we're going to be seeing now. Like, we know this is the end of the High Republic. So something, events happen in this last 100 years of the High Republic that makes it stop being the High Republic. Mm-hmm. So maybe, yeah, it seems it might be what we've kind of teased in the previous episode, that there's a complacency that allows rot to spread, you know, with the people get stuck in bureaucracy, like, well, we can't do this until we file the paperwork and da da da, like, right, but people are dying right now, you know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We have to make sure that we go through the appropriate channels.
Right.
And then all the Jedi are just stuck in Barash vows and unable to do anything.
Right. So, yeah, about that Barash vow. So, first of all, cool practical effect. I liked how they did it with him, like that his robe was draped, so it was hiding whatever was supporting him to be floating in the air like that. But yeah, so the Barash vow, I talked about that in the High Republic overview episode. It doesn't have to mean not speaking to anyone for 10 years, like he's taken it. I had actually assumed going into the series that Kel Naka, the Jedi Wookiee, had taken a Barash vow because he's described in the marketing materials as a loner who lives a solitary life sequestered in the jungle. But here's how the Barash vow is described in the High Republic Phase 1 young adult novel, Into the Dark. So this is an excerpt from that novel. "I can't," Dez said. His voice sounded remote. He didn't quite meet Wreath's eyes. "Tomorrow I'm leaving for one of the contemplation worlds. I'm taking the Barash vow." The Barash vow was an extreme commitment to gaining ultimate communion with the Force. Those who took the vow spent years, sometimes even decades, in deep meditation and in solitude. It was the last path Wreath would have ever foreseen for Dez. "But why?" Wreath asked. "The Barash vow, it's taken by Jedi who've made terrible mistakes. You didn't. You haven't broken your connection to the Force."
Now, if it's an absolution tactic, I guess the question is, how bad was what Torben did where 10 years isn't enough for him to feel like he had absolution and he needed that poison?
Right, absolutely. I mean, and this was also, well, we'll get to that. But you notice that she gave him the choice, turn yourself in or kill yourself. And he chose.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't want to face justice. Oh, hey, that's the name of the episode.
So she got her revenge.
Mm-hmm.
So, by the way, if people want to know more about the Barash vow, it's named after Barash Sylvain, who, there's a Blade comic series set in Phase 2. So that's the phase you're reading now, John. So that's 100 years earlier than what I just described, 200 years before the Acolyte. And that's the story of how Barash Sylvain, why she started this vow, what she did, basically. Although it was originally brought up in the Darth Vader comics, which we'll talk about later in the timeline.
Okay.
So on the other side of things, Team Jedi is gathering on their ship. Osha and Jeki bond until Saul walks in and Jeki goes back to serious Padawan mode. And Yord whines to Saul about Osha not being restrained. Even says, if Mei's alive, it doesn't mean Osha is innocent. And Saul tells him not to let fear cloud his judgment. Saul fills Vernestra in on the May of it all via comlink, and Vernestra tells him about Torben's murder. This time, of course, Osha has an alibi. Vernestra asks Saul to go investigate and bring Osha to help. Yord objects, but but shuts up at Saul's "The Jedi agree with me." Later, Saul and Osha have a heart-to-heart, and Saul shares his guilt about not being able to save both twins. Osha expresses her anger at her sister for what happened that night, for what's happening now.
Can I just say, as a silly note, before we get into the deeper parts of the scene, every time you say Jackie, I feel like you are in the Fred Armisen SNL skit, The Californian, saying Jackie. Jackie, what are you doing here?
Or saying it with like a New Zealand accent.
Jicky. Oh, yeah. You're Omega. Jicky. Oh, that's funny. That's good. Well, I'll take the name seriously by the end of the season, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's a perfectly Star Wars-y name.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, just have to point out for the ship lovers that this was a big deal online that they revealed for the first time before showing it on screen, a new ship, the Pollen 717 Jedi Transport, which it apparently separates into two segments. The front of the ship moves forward toward the planet while the rear stays in orbit. So this might be a prototype to the hyperspace transport rings that we see in the prequel film era.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So if anyone knows more thoughts, we definitely want to hear from you. Yord, we have to talk about Yord again, because the way he behaves toward Osha, who was, it seems like, his former friend, the way she treats him at least. And he was, it seems like when he first met her again, he wanted to be soft toward her and then hardened himself. But it's very red flags, all the red flags with Yord. Although it is true she ran before, and I'm wondering, do you think like he has a reason to be afraid of her from whatever happened around her expulsion?
Well, what was she definitely expelled, or did she voluntarily leave?
That's true. She does say that she left, although others say that it was Indara who suggested she leave.
Wonder if it's both, right? They had a heart to heart, and Indara's like, I don't know, if you can't let go of this anchor, maybe this isn't for you. And then she goes, yeah, I guess it isn't. She leaves. Yeah, I wonder, maybe she touched the darkness a little bit. And everyone said, oh, that's not great. Although, you know, I think the Jedi Padawans should be able to, you know, accidentally touch the darkness and know, okay, don't go there next time. Otherwise, how do you know what to avoid?
Yeah, I mean, the Star Wars canon is littered with stories of where people are curious about that side. And then because of the way they're so harshly treated for just exploring it, for being curious, it ends up pushing them further into it.
Yeah, and something that's really interesting to me, and this is something that I read in the Phase 2 books, is that there's all these different, and I don't know if it's still around by this point in the timeline, but all these different, sects of Jedi, basically, that you can explore on Jedha. And I would be surprised if there's not at least one that's like, well, we should at least know how the dark side works.
Right. Yeah. I need to know about the current state of Jedha. We know that there was that civil war. We know that, yeah, there were indeed like all the different force sects that we talked about in previous episodes in the Canon Timeline podcast. So we know at least some of them survived, because more than 100 years after this, we still have the Guardians of the Wills on Jedha. But Yord, it might just be his arrogance, his dogmatism. But he says, even if Mei is alive, she wouldn't have had the training, as if the Jedi are the only people who could have possibly trained her. Like, is that a Yord thing?
Yeah. I'm just like, maybe his question is, if a Jedi didn't train you, an established Jedi, was it Osha, right? Was it Osha who gave her the training? But we know as the audience, Osha is having trouble even touching the Force.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and it just seems like that there would be a bunch of different ways that you could learn to use the Force. At least that used to be the case. So either Yord has blinders up, which is perfectly possible. He seems like that type of character. Or there's all of the other non-Jedi sects have diminished in the last century or so.
Well, that and they are in deep denial that the Sith exist, right?
Right.
Like they
right.
are, no, the that's Jedi a given. Are just fully yeah. head in the sand.
Yeah, that's a given.
Yeah, you know, their heads in Tatooine, their heads are in the sand. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing that is most surprising to them is that Mayne knew how to fight Jedi, not necessarily that she was just fighting like a Jedi, but she knew how to
right
get to the Jedi's weaknesses
to fight against a lightsaber, I guess. Yeah,
right, right.
Yeah, I found it interesting that even Vernestra didn't seem to know about Mayne, or do you think she did?
No, I think she knew about who Mayne was. She just
right that she didn't know that she was alive.
Right, right.
I'm so suspicious of Vernestra right now. I know she was a hero earlier in the timeline, but I think there's always been an inherent dogmatism in her that could be lead her to do what she thinks are the right things for the wrong reason.
Well, come on now. Or, no one has ever fallen wrong to the darkness for the in Star right Wars. Reasons.
Yeah, no.
That's never happened. Huh. Oh, wait, I could use an appropriate timeline thing. Revan never fell to the dark side.
That's true. More than once. I found it interesting that Osha immediately knew Olega meant Torben. So it seems like whatever happened on her planet as a child, it seems like she maintained a relationship with those Jedi who were there after her childhood rescue, not just Saul, but the others as well.
Mm.
Or at least was aware of what they were up to.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I didn't get the sense that she knew him specifically. But maybe
she did say, because as soon as someone said Olegan, she's like, Torben's there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Fair enough. I forgot about that.
I'm curious if we'll see what their relationship continued to be after that. I mean, I guess they have to, because they're laying those teases down, especially with Indara and her.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess maybe it's that he was one of the four station. Like, that's what's connecting all these people, is he's one of the four station on her home planet. So she probably knew all these Jedi before. They right. probably knew she was force sensitive. They mm-hmm. knew she was there. And I guess what I'm guessing is they knew she was force sensitive, but they learned this after she was aged out of where she could join the Jedi. And then after everything in her home planet is destroyed, they're like, well, right. she has nowhere else to go. Let's break the rules a little bit and let her be a Jedi.
Yeah. Yeah, I always wonder about the Jedi thinking of like, oh, we can't train children if they're above a certain age, because not just for like the creepy grooming aspects, but just because you want these force sensitive, you know, some of them quite powerful people to just be wandering around out there untrained and, you know, free to fall under the instruction of maybe some teachings that you don't want them to have.
Well, I think this is part of the Jedi hubris of thinking that they're the only way in town, right? Mm. They do think that I know you're comparing it with the thinking of the White Tower, right? Which is
right. I am.
There should
I am.
Like even if you in the Wheel of Time, if anyone here is not a Wheel of Time person, this whole magic school, you know, Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, if you will, but only for women. Their thinking is, we can't let people just wander around not knowing how to control this. So we're going to give them at least enough training to know how to not kill themselves or others.
Right.
And then we're going to send them away. Good question. Good question. There should be like a Jedi light training for these people.
Right. Exactly. Just, I mean, because I understand maybe some are released because they weren't strong enough in the Jedi. Mm-hmm. I mean, some are released because they weren't strong enough or they didn't get their kyber crystals. But then at least they know enough to do like basic things or to understand
yeah.
what they have.
Yeah, I think the Force too is, I think we have not seen someone like accidentally use the Force to detriment, right? Is that a thing?
What do you mean? Oh, where they like accidentally hurt themselves with it? Yeah,
yeah,
I guess you're right.
Yeah, that's not really a thing that happens with the Force. I think the one power in the Wheel of Time is a lot more right. dangerous. To an right. unskilled user.
Right. And if you accidentally use it, you get sick. Yeah. And right. which doesn't definitely, we definitely haven't seen that with the Force.
Right, right. The Force is a good thing. You want to touch it.
Yeah. I just think about like having powerful people who
yeah.
might just make up their own way of doing things, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I imagine the Jedi would think it is.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I think just, again, I think they think they have a monopoly on power with the Force, you know, fighting style with the Force. Mm-hmm. So they think, well, okay, they may be able to commune with the Force and do some parlor tricks, but they're not going to be able to do any real damage or build a lightsaber right. or anything like that without us. Right. Meanwhile, the Sith are over there in the secret, just, mm-hmm. you know, plotting.
So we also get in this scene, Saul calls attention to Osha's tattoo on her shoulder. I'm wondering, she's like, it's a crazy night with some of my crew. So this is, again, contrasting that staying at home that she was talking about. But do you think the tattoo is going to end up meaning something, or it's just going to be used to ID her versus May later?
I think probably just ID that and the tattoo on May's forehead, which, right. I mean, that whole thing.
Well, that's
going to
mean something.
That,
that's yeah, the spiral's yeah, yeah. going to mean something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the tattoo on May's forehead not being on, I noticed that immediately when we went to Osha the first time. And I thought, oh, this is a flashback, and then it wasn't.
Right.
Because I didn't know this was a twin plot until we definitely knew, you know?
Okay, good.
Yeah, I didn't watch a lot of the trailers. I wanted to go in cold.
Right. Well, it's just like on the poster, she was pictured twice and they had, and also I was watching interviews and she just was straight out. She was like, yeah, when I'm playing Osha with my droid Pip, I'm like, okay.
Well, the good news is I don't have those spoilers. The only thing I saw was Hayden Christensen congratulating her on everything. That was a sweet video.
That was delightful. Yeah. Yeah. She had such a good reaction.
Yep.
So, what she didn't have a good reaction to, though, her character, Osha, at least, was her family and entire village's death, which I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. But she says to Saul, I know you have made peace with what happened there. That is a lesson you tried to teach me many times. And he says, perhaps I wasn't a very good teacher. What do you think about that exchange?
It's interesting. I wonder if, because, you know, Saul says in the first one, you know, you can remember the past and not repeat your mistakes. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Right. I wonder if he's thinking, she thinks she has to let go of it entirely. I'm asking her to make peace with it. That's right. A different thing, right? Like, acceptance is not the same as ignorance and forgetfulness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I do wonder if Saul doesn't know some things. I have a feeling that the other three seem like they feel more guilty. Maybe not Indara, but at least Torben and Kelnaka are doing versions of the Barash vow, it seems. And so it seems like he is the most empathetic character we've met. So if he's not feeling as guilty as the others, maybe it's because he doesn't know everything.
Yeah, I will say I would almost like if he does know something and he's been trying to repent. And this is part of the reason he was so hellbent on going to Osha and saving her.
That could be.
Because that makes for a more complex character and a more interesting story, I think.
Yeah. He does just like love Osha something special, it seems. I notice somebody was joking online about how when Jackie's like, maybe May's alive, he's like, no, shut up. And when Osha's like, maybe May's alive, and he's like, oh, I believe you, baby girl. Of course she is.
Right. Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Yeah. He lights up when he talks to Osha.
Yep. I think really, I mean, you have a near-death experience with somebody, that's a bond for life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, maybe he probably sees Osha as more of an almost daughter figure because of the circumstances that she became his Padawan.
And once more, we highlight one of the weaknesses of the Jedi is by banning attachments, the heart will seek out attachments wherever it can find it. Like, we need attachments. We need relationship. That's part of our being is... I was going to say humans, but humanoids, let's say, in the Star Wars universe.
Well, even let's look at Doctor Who. You know, he's always taking on companions, knowing that it won't be forever and he'll outlive them. But he needs that to tie him to keep going, you know?
Yeah. And of course, he's like, every now and then he gets cranky and he's like, I don't need a companion. And then obviously, like a minute later, he has a companion.
Right. Yeah, he's just throwing a little temper tantrum then, as we all do.
I'm the Time Lord Victorious. Throwing his temper tantrums. All right. Enough Doctor Who. More Star Wars.
All right. So speaking of people who may not be what they seem, May shows up at an apothecary on Alega, recently taken over, presumably in a nefarious means, By a shifty human character named Chimer, played by Manny Jacinto. Stinking of booze, he said he waited up for her all night, and she tells him about the force field failure. He tells her to find Torben's weakness. Everyone has a weakness. And May asks Chimer to make her a poison. He admonishes her, reminding her that she is required to kill at least one Jedi without a weapon. She says that she has two more tries after this. Chimer makes her the poison and gives her an idea, saying, "The impenetrable meditator, like every Jedi, he only thinks he's found peace. What he really needs is something only you can give him, absolution." Mm. May knows what she needs to do and demands Chimer not to tell their master about her struggles. I mean, I have a feeling if Chimer's not the master himself, the master knows everything Chimer knows.
Oh, absolutely. Chimer is a fair weather friend, for sure. Can I also add, John M. from our Patreon commented, "Are we not discussing Jason Mendoza? Where's Eleanor, Chidi, Tahani, and Michael, and Janet?"
Yes.
Referring to The Good Place, of course, since Jason from The Good Place plays Chimer.
Yeah, so I said I struck out when I asked Bob about watching The Good Place. Have you watched The Good Place?
Oh, yeah, I watched the whole thing. I loved
it. Okay, yeah, great.
Yeah, it's just funny. I saw John's comment, and I was like, wait, he's only in episode two.
Right.
But I figured we'll just address it on this.
Right. So he's famously, he plays this hilarious himbo in The Good Place. And here, it seems like he's putting on not a himbo persona, but he's putting on this like drunken lazy persona. Mm-hmm. But then there are moments when it counts, like he's very sharp, like the way he reacts when May attacks him at the end of the episode in the alleyway. Right. It's like, whoa, this is a guy who can fight. He's got good mm-hmm. reflexes. And, you know, the way he clocks that Osha is pretending to be May, not that she was very good at it, but still.
And he's a very good poison maker, right? Like he... Mm-hmm. He made an effective poison that killed a Jedi within seconds, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't take over that apothecary shop by accident.
Mm-hmm. Do you think every town he goes to, he's just like, I got to find an apothecary shop to take over?
Yeah, I guess so. Rob. There's like a stack of apothecary maker bodies.
He's like, the taxes on these are just adding up.
Yeah. I loved, by the way, overall, the vibrancy of this Olega Market scene. It did remind me of the Eclipse trailer, which, you know, just mm-hmm. the High Republic, the fact that it's so diverse and lived in. And yeah.
Yeah. Man, I hope that game's good.
Yes, me too. Oh, my gosh. I hope it comes out.
You never know with this universe.
Right. So I noticed, by the way, she asks him as soon as she sees Chimer, she's like, "What are you wearing?" So, and he says he took it off the guy who owns his place to blend in. But it makes me wonder, what does he normally wear? Like, could it be something distinctive?
Like a voice changer mask.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good question, though.
Yeah. And, of course, we have to address this whole "peace is a lie" thing that he says.
Mm-hmm.
So we brought this up in the Acolyte preview episode, but, you know, you heard them exchange "pieces of lie." Well, "pieces of lie" is the beginning of the Sith code. So the Sith code again goes, "Pieces of lie, there is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. Through power, I gain victory."
I'm going to try to not make you bleep me again, but I think that we have similar characters later in the timeline who are former Sith, but still adhere to a lot of the tenets of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think maybe that's what this whole sect is.
Yeah. Yeah, it could be just because he is, you know, obviously familiar with the Sith code or teaching or whatever, doesn't necessarily make him a Sith, because he was described in the marketing materials as a traitor. And if that's true, then probably would get his hands on Sith artifacts. So this code could come from that as well.
Would have been friends with Luthen.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, they would have at least... No, Luthen exists and is a traitor later in the timeline. So just to contrast, the Jedi code, by the way, is there is no ignorance, there is knowledge. There is no passion, there is serenity. There is no chaos, there is harmony. There is no death, there is the Force. Which sounds like a whole lot of denial, but it's nice.
Yeah, it's. I think you're right, though. That's a really good. That is a really good point. That this is all denial, right? Like there, it's all like this doesn't exist,
right? Exactly.
Instead of saying, you know, there, I don't see a lot of balance in this. I know it says harmony. There is no chaos. Mm-hmm. There is chaos. The universe right. is chaos.
Entropy is real. We can't fight it.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can fight it, but we'll fail.
And there is passion. That's why mm-hmm. you guys have people all the time having feelings that they have to shove down. It's we see modern religions today, you know, certain sects of modern religions forcing people to shove feelings down and ignore them. And it's unhealthy. And I don't think it's healthier just because these are the good guys in the story.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Chimer said, like every Jedi, Torben only thinks he's found peace. I do prefer the High Republic Jedi saying is for light and life, which is a lot more fun.
No, cringe.
And also, we have to mention that plant, Bunta, that he used for the poison. This is a new plant in the Star Wars universe, and it's from Brendok, which is the planet that we find out the twins came from. And it's used for hunting in their home planet, starting in childhood. So this tells us a bit about this culture on Brendok, that they are... I mean, I guess a lot of children do learn how to hunt, but it shows that this is a hunting society, that children are put to work in that way, learn to kill at a young age.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. The plant looks like kind of like a flaky red when he holds it up, but then it turns the vial green.
Yeah. So, and it's like a crushed red pepper kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see if we should be paying attention to like red plants or green vials later in this series.
Yep. Yep. Good call.
All right. That brings us about halfway through the episode. So what do you think about a quick break before we dive into the second half?
I'm loving it.
All right. See you in a sec on the other side.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Okay, now let's dive into the second half of the episode. So, Team Jedi arrives at the outpost to the surprise of the local Jedi, and Saul shares that this crime may be part of a larger investigation. Meanwhile, May approaches Torben with the poison to offer him that absolution, and the scarred, guilt-ridden Torben ends his meditation to take the vial and drink it. His last words are, "I've been waiting for you, May. Forgive me. We thought we were doing the right thing."
Mm.
Interesting, he said May. As the Jedi enter the temple, Osha peels off to follow a vision of her sister as a child, finding Torben already dead and picking up the vial to sniff it, just as the other Jedi enter the room. Yord steps out of the shadows to confirm Torben was dead before Osha entered the room. He was following her. Osha IDs the poison as a plant from her home planet. So, yeah, it's interesting to contrast Saul and Vernestra in this scene, especially where we just see how much more of an open character Saul is. Like he's like, "Hey, this is what's going on. Here's all the deeds you need to know," which does slow them down so that they are talking outside when the murder actually happens instead of being inside.
Mm. Yeah, I love Saul. I love Saul with all my heart. I think Marilyn might be in love with the man. But yeah, he's got to hurry up a little bit.
Well, I mean, I think, but he is then later in the episode, he's the one saying to Vernestra, like, "We don't have time for a meeting right now. We know where the assassin is going.
Yeah.
What do you think of Yord's behavior in this scene? Like on the one hand, he stood up for her, or did he cover for her? I'm very suspicious of everyone.
No, I think he did follow her, and he mm-hmm. if he hadn't said something, she might have been arrested. But yeah, I think him following her and seeing it made me think that she it made me think that he is not part of this dark side cult. I think he legitimately is just a hall monitor, and because he followed her and was snooping, he learned that she was not the culprit, and therefore he doesn't want to waste everybody's time with interrogating May, interrogating right. OSHA.
Right. Do you think that, so Saul was convinced that Torben would speak to him, and of course he didn't get the chance. Do you think that Torben would have spoken to Saul? I'm very curious.
Maybe Saul, how about this? Maybe Saul is not directly implicated in what happened, but he knows what happened and he's kept quiet about it.
Mm.
He's like, that's your testimony to give. I'm not going to, you know, go and tell the right. Jedi Council about it, but you know, you have to live with that. I think maybe he would have spoken to him based only on like not blackmail, but just I owe a debt to you kind of.
Right. I mean, Torben said, you know, first of all, it's interesting. Torben knew May was alive. He said, I've been waiting for you. And Saul definitely did not know May was alive. So it seems like that Saul doesn't know something. But also Torben ends with, we thought we were doing the right thing. So I think if Saul mm-hmm. did know anything, you know, he would probably see that it came from a place of trying to be good.
Right, right. I could think of an example later that I can't say, but sort of the Jedi Council being like, well, this seems like a bad thing to do, but also mm-hmm. we're out of options.
Right.
Comes from yeah. a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. I mean, there are a few examples, I would say, in the history of them saying, like, this is something we never should not do, blah, blah, blah. But we're going to do it because of circumstances. I mean, we saw that also.
Slippery slope, baby.
Yeah.
Slippery
even in
slope.
The High Republic with, you know, the way that they started pressing children to train younger, and they pressed a bunch of younglings to be or Padawans to become Jedi more quickly to fight a threat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. It is definitely telling, though, that Torben may have thought he did the right thing, but in the end, he chose poison over confessing to the Jedi Council. So he does not want people to know whatever he did for whatever he thought were the right reasons.
Yeah, I'm really excited to have this mystery solved. Do we know that this is a multi-season show, by the way?
It is, as of now, it was pitched as a multi-season show. Season 2 has not yet been greenlit. We did just get the first numbers in, and this was the most popular debut on Disney Plus this year so far.
Okay.
Really good
That's
numbers.
A good sign.
Yeah, so it's a good sign. Leslie Headlin said, or Headlin, I'm not sure which way I should pronounce it. But anyway, she said that she wants to do more series, and she knows what she wants to do, but she wanted to take a break in between because this was a lot.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so speaking of a lot, the next section it's an action-heavy section, so mm-hmm. a lot of little plot details, so the recap is slightly longer, so bear with me for a moment, but we've got some confrontations happening. The Jedi, they find out that the apothecary in town, the only possible source of this plant, was recently taken over by a sudden outsider. They decide to send OSHA pretending to be May to talk to Chimer, recording his confession about the poison, which works, but OSHA's acting weird and Chimer clocks it pretty quickly when she says she wanted to thank him. Yeah, that was definitely, she's like, I just wanted to thank you. He's like, not May.
Right.
The Jedi charge in. Chimer plays innocent, says he's just a simple supplier, one who happens to know that May is trying to get revenge on exactly 4 Jedi. He says she'll be back that night to get supplies. Saul sets Yord on watch, sends Jackie to the ship, and takes OSHA with him. That night, Saul insists he must face May alone, though OSHA argues that she has the right, saying her sister destroyed her life. Saul points out that what she's talking about is revenge, not justice. He wants the chance to do right by May. OSHA points out that if May is targeting 4 Jedi, Saul must be one of them. Saul says OSHA needs more faith in him and May both, and leaves. Saul confronts May and they fight. and Saul notes that she's not using a weapon and is reaching for his saber. He ultimately disarms her, and she won't tell him who trained her. And when he searches her mind, he realizes that she doesn't even know who her master is, and that she thinks of her sister still, who she thought was dead. Yord pops up to correct that knowledge, and Jeki brings his ship to make an arrest, but Mei creates a cloud of dust, allowing her to escape. She finally crosses paths with her sister, and they pause and look at each other, Mei asking, "Oshi?" And Osha fires shots set to stun, intentionally missing her sister, pushing Mei to speed out on her stolen cruiser before the Jedi arrive.
Yeah. So I have a lot of questions here. Just a whole lot of questions.
All right.
First one being, Mei does not actually blame Saul for anything, right? Like, she actually seems to, like, I think she would have killed him, but I think she knows that he doesn't know anything, or that he wasn't guilty or complicit in it.
I feel like she had tears in her eyes fighting him. I think I saw that. She looked at least very upset about it. She wasn't, it wasn't like when she was fighting Indara and she was angry.
Right. Or even Torben, where she definitely had contempt for him. I didn't see any of that with her fight with Saul. And maybe it's because it was unexpected where the other two were planned. But I think that she was really not happy about this whole thing.
Right. Yeah. No, she, and it seems, you know, she obviously, she couldn't kill him there. I guess she would have if she could have, or she would have taken his lightsaber if he had allowed her. But she seems to have her list in order for some reason. Like, the next one has to be Kalmaka.
Yeah, I wonder if she's going from most culpable to least culpable.
Maybe. That would make sense. I would buy that. That feels right.
Or is it? No, I was going to say, is it alphabetical? But it's not, because Torben came before Kalmaka.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I have
no.
The Doctor Who in my head.
I still don't like that reveal. I noticed, by the way, well, first of all, two things. One, Lee Jung-jae's reactions are just absolutely everything. I love his reactions when Osha was being awkward as a mole, and he's like, oh, God. Oh, God. But it's interesting that he held the Jedi back, because as soon as Chimera says, like, yeah, I made the poison or whatever, Jeki's like, send them in, and Saul's like, wait a minute, hoping to get more out of it. So it does. He gave that extra beat that put Mei in a little bit more danger, or sorry, Osha in a little bit more danger to hopefully get more info. Just noticing that.
Yeah, I think I kind of agreed with him, though. I think they could have gotten more out of that interaction. And I think Jeki and and Yord were a little gung-ho, right? They're both a little trigger happy. Yord because he's Yord, and Jeki because he's a Padawan.
Right. Right. Although Jeki, she was kind of an MVP in this scene. It was her. So Yord wanted to be the one doing the confrontation, of course, because he's got a hero complex.
Right.
And I love,
it's the hair. It's really the hair. I mean, he's you could see this guy playing like Charming in Shrek.
Right.
Like he's just ready to go. He's just ready to ride in and save the princess on a dragon.
Absolutely. People are calling it Killmonger hair.
Oh, my God. That's so funny. That's so true, though.
It
but
is.
Killmonger didn't have the force, so I think we're settled on the gel aspect of his hair.
Right.
It's gel or it's hairspray. It's something you know, you can get on Earth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that Yord is, yeah, he's not, he cannot give any extra concentration to that. But yeah, I one of the best pieces of comedy that we've had so far in the first two episodes is Jeki calling him out on things like, Yord, put your shirt back on.
Yeah. And we need that. I'm really glad that they have some of those moments of comedy, because without that, it doesn't feel like Star Wars. And two, it just gets so dense with this kind of dark plot line.
Yeah. And I love that it was Jeki's idea to send Osha. She just like also calls Yord out again. Okay. What did he say? He was like, oh, right. Because he wanted to just like basically take Chimera into custody immediately. And Jeki's like, oh, or we skip that. And she just talks to him.
Yeah. It's his first instinct is to whip out a lightsaber all the time.
Right. Absolutely. But he does get, so Yord Horde, he did get one of the most iconic lines in Star Wars universe. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Oh my God. That, I would be okay if we just let that go.
I don't hate it, but that better be the only one for this show. Like, okay, you did the
thing.
Yeah.
I just don't want, I understand why we do it. I understand it's the member berries, but it'd be okay if we were just like, let's not do this line anymore. You know, all Star Wars, you're free. You're free, right. Writers. You don't have to put that line in here.
You know, I just took a deep dive into the Planet of the Apes, everything. And there are certain lines like that that come back again and again. And there was one comic series where they said, get your stinking hands off me in every single issue. I'm like, no, come on.
Oh, no.
Lots of questions about Chimer, of course. So first of all, he is also a good source of comic relief. I love when he was like, when they were asking him, who is he, as in her master? And he says, who's he? And he's like, oh, I thought he, and he points to Yord, was with you.
Oh, man, that's funny.
But he's definitely playing dumb and elevating it to an art form. He's also says, like, please don't do the memory wipe thing or whatever it is you guys do.
You know, it's funny that in The Good Place, he has to pretend he's smart while the character is dumb.
Right.
And in this he has to pretend he's dumb when the character is smart. Yeah. He's a really good actor. Like, he's really great at changing tones quickly.
Because he plays them all convincingly because he's charming. He's got that natural.
Right.
It is, by the way, I don't think we've mentioned on the podcast, and that final scene where with the confrontation between the sisters, the blaster is set to stun. And I know that because stun shots are always circular and blue in Star Wars. So you can tell them apart from lethal shots, which are more like pointy straight.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see blue circles, you know that someone set to stun. So, I mean, obviously she was giving her sister a chance to get away, right? I mean, she wanted her to get away.
Yeah, rather. Yeah. I think she poorly aimed on purpose.
Right.
Yeah. And I think Sol saw that and understood what happened. I think he's disappointed, but he's not angry because he understands. That's still her sister at the end of the day.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, she was kind of brought, I think, so that she could try to talk to her sister. But it was interesting when she was on the freighter herself, Osha, and the other prisoners are like, oh, she's like, I believe, I have faith in the Jedi. And they're like, okay, well, enjoy jail. And now when it comes to putting her sister in that place where her faith doesn't seem to be in the Jedi at this moment, she's like, she's wants to protect her sister rather than trust in the Jedi justice.
Yeah. And, you know, at first I was like, Mei is being so selfish. She's putting her sister in danger of, you know, making her sister a suspect because the Jedi know her. But then as you learn that she didn't even know that Osha was alive, you're like, oh, right. Okay. She was only risking herself in her head.
Right. I have a feeling that Mei's going to start to look less and less like the villain that she at first seems as this goes on.
Yeah, perhaps by the end they'll flip the titles where it's referring to the opposite twin.
Right. So I ranked the characters from the first two episodes on in order of how sus they are. Do you want to hear my rankings?
Okay. Yeah, I'm in.
All right. So least sus is Saul, and followed by Jackie, and then Kelnaka. Osha, and then I have Mei, but I'm ready to see her perspective. So this is like the first half of the list. We're getting to Torben's in the middle. Tassi Loa, I don't know, just maybe because of her race. She's too much of a rule follower. And then Indara, definitely something going on there. Yord, Vernestra, and then Chimer is obviously the most sus of them all.
I don't know. I might put Torben just less sus than Chimer.
Okay. I mean, he feels guilty. Something. He did something. Yeah. He did do something. But he feels guilty about it.
We know he did
it.
Something.
Right. Yeah. He knows he did something. True. Yeah.
I mean, dude didn't talk to anybody for 10 years. You know, if this is something that's known to be a repentance thing, is nobody like, what did this guy do that he's been in this trance for 10 years?
Yeah.
Nobody's like questioning that. Hey, maybe we should look at his holodeck. You know, like I don't know.
I'm sure like the other Jedi like Indara or maybe even Vernestra stepped in and said whatever needed to be said, you know, or he's just so pious. He's just so pious, you know.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I mean, Vernestra is, we know, obsessed with the image of the Jedi more than justice.
Right. It's interesting, though, to contrast, though, if Kelnaka has also, and we'll talk about the final scene with Kelnaka in just a sec, but if Kelnaka has also taken a Barash vow, he's gone into the middle of the jungle where he's living but isolated. Mm-hmm. Whereas Torben chose to do this meditation thing in the middle of a city in a temple with other Jedi. So he is surrounded by people, but then still isolating himself and like shutting himself off from life.
I love that he's just furniture. Like they just can have a conversation around him and they're like, hey, what's up? You know, oh, there's Torby. You know, he's a fixture of the temple.
But I guess he must hear what they're saying because he heard May.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would be kind of creepy. Like he's listening in on everything. You probably forget at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a weekend at Torben's.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of Kelnaka, he was my immediate favorite coming out of it. Although Saul may be overtaking. Oh, I really love all the characters in this show, to be honest. But okay. Connecting again via comlink, Vernestra tells Saul she's convening a small council and he's being summoned. Despite his protests that they don't have time, they know where May is going next, to the jungle planet of Kofar, to kill the other Jedi on her list, the Wookiee Kelnaka. Back at the pharmacy, May confronts Chimaer for selling her out. He says he'll make it up to her by getting them both off the planet. He's found Kelnaka and they're headed to Kofar indeed. Meanwhile, in a jungle in Kofar, two Huttese speaking humans are lost. They spot the wreck of a ship, not realizing there's a Wookiee who doesn't want company inside. Kelnaka force pulls the blaster out of their hands, breaks it, and the humans go running. So, yeah, Kofar is very like, we've seen enough of Kashyyyk, the Wookiee planet. Let's make another planet that looks just like it.
I'm kind of glad because you would think that, you know, a lot of species settled different planets and we've never seen another world with the Wookiees. And, you know, we've seen enough of Kashyyyk home life with the Star Wars Christmas special, Star Wars holiday special that we did, which still is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, I really loved seeing this. I loved how he didn't attack them. He just took their gun, broke it in half, and then roared at them. I think that's fair. That's a fair response.
Yeah. Someone called it getting off my lawn energy. Can't remember who said that, but I keep thinking of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like the kind of behavior you expect from a Jedi, but from a Wookiee, it's, you know, they're lucky he didn't rip their arms off.
Right, right. They are known to do that, aren't they?
Yeah. And the sign, by the way, it was in Shriwook with their language, and it just said, basically, get off my lawn, like, go away, leave me alone. But I do wonder, so because it's written in Shriwook, I'm wondering if this is in the Wookiee system somewhere nearby, you know, there's more Wookiees on this planet.
Yeah, that would be cool. Do you know what his lightsaber looks like yet?
Is it
in the trailers or anything?
Yeah, no, I said in the preview episode, it's either blue or green, but I can't remember which at the moment. I think green. I don't know.
Oh, no, I mean the hilt.
Oh, the hilt. Oh,
because I know that there's a thing in the Clone Wars about how Wookiees often have wooden hilts.
Oh, right. Yeah, good point. I did not pay attention to that, to be honest, but I think there's a picture online.
Okay. I can't wait to see it in the show. I'm going to wait till I see it in the show. Okay. And I'm looking forward to it. Because I've always wanted to see like a live action version of that.
Right. Right. Yeah. Because we see there's a famous one from earlier in the High Republic books, Buriaga. And people are like, why isn't Buriaga showing up? What does that mean about Buriaga? Because again, the books are not done yet. So I think they're not going to. Buriaga could very well just be out there somewhere. But they're not going to tell us anything about him in this show because the books aren't done.
He's busy.
Yet. Yeah.
Guy's busy. How long do Wookiees live?
A very long time. So Chewbacca's already alive. He's about 70 at this point. So he's out somewhere. Yeah.
Wow.
But it's interesting because their aging rites happen at age 12, which is even younger than for most humans.
Mm. I wonder when Chewbacca's going to have his kids then and start watching Four-Armed Julia Child.
The Christmas special.
I just love it. I will reference it anytime I can.
No, this is definitely, we're going to be covering it on the podcast. So if
if you
want to be a guest, I would love that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I want to come on the Clone Wars at some point, if you don't mind. But
no, of course. Yeah. Tell me when. Can you do a Wookiee impression?
Oh, not well.
Actually, that's pretty good. It's pretty good.
Oh, okay. All right.
I can't do it. Nope. I did it better in earlier episodes. but I'm trying to collect Wookiee impressions from listeners. So if anyone can do a good one, send it to swtimelinepodcast@gmail.com. I'm going to put together a compilation.
Did you ever see that Reddit post? I'm sure it was fake, but it was like somebody had a contentious divorce and they put up signs like, I really want Wookiee impressions. And they put their ex-partner's number. So they were just getting calls all the time.
I would kind of have to laugh, I think. Although I guess it would get annoying.
I mean, you'd have to change your number, but that's right. All right.
Yeah, well. So I love, by the way, the actor who's playing Khal Naka is a Finnish actor named Jonas Suotamo. And he also played Chewie in the newer movies.
Yeah, I saw that. He was a basketball player, right?
Yeah, a very tall guy.
Yeah, I was like, what was it, 6'11 or something like that? Crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know his height, but you see him next to the other actors and he dwarfs over even over the ones who I thought were tall. Of course, I'm myself, in American terms, I'm 5'2", so everyone dwarfs over me.
Fair enough. My wife is also the same height, so I know that height well.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, there might be more. We might get some more Wookiee crossovers in season two. So all the more reason to hope for a season two. Where there's also hope of maybe some Hutts showing up, because we had the reference to the party moon. And now we have people speaking Huttese, which is the language of the Nalhata system. So maybe we'll go to Nar Shaddaa, the party moon, ourselves in this show, or maybe we will see a Hutt. Jabba is alive. He's almost 500 at this point. He was he was born in 600 BBY. So
I've never been a big Hutt fan. I'm going to be honest with you. Okay. I'm not a big Hutt guy. Every time they show up, I'm like, eh.
All right. Yeah, I am. And I know Bob is. Bob really wants to see some Hutts. I just find it there. I want to know more about their crime family, basically. I want to know more about their culture and their species. I'm intrigued.
Now, give me the pirates. I love the space pirates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we should be getting some pirates sooner or later, because this is prime pirate time.
Mm, the high seas of space.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, also, for Khal Naka fans, Marvel Comics just announced this week that they're going to publish a one-shot comic about him on September 4th, 2024, which is going
to
be set right before this. So it's going to bridge the gap between the High Republic books and this show, basically.
Hmm.
So definitely going to talk about that after it comes out.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely in on the High Republic now. I think the show really excited me more about it. Mm-hmm. I did actually listen to some of the Light of the Jedi audiobook last night, but I couldn't keep my eyes open. I was so tired last night, but I wanted to finish Convergence and I couldn't do that. So I figured I had the Light of the Jedi audiobook already. I'll go back to that and I'll try to do it. And I was like, okay, this is better now that I have like a grasp on this era.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast.
Oh, yeah. this show, this is why I think that a lot more people are going to go back and read the books after this, because this show is going to make them curious. Like, oh, well, what is different and what happened? And
it's just really hard to, especially because it's not like it's decayed versions of the original trilogy, right? Like the original trilogy is the decayed version. So it's hard to go back to imagining not a declined version, but an improved version in the past. It's a really hard thing to conceptualize if you don't have it visually.
Right. Yeah. And Leslie Headland did say that she did expressly do that. She was like, okay, well, we look at the original trilogy, where things stand. We look at the prequel trilogy, where things stood then. How do we just draw this line back further in terms of the design of things, in terms of the state of the universe?
You carry the 4 and add the flux capacitor and
insert the GIF with the woman doing calculations in the air. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
All right. Shall we get into a little trailer-based speculation? So,
sure. Again, I didn't watch it, but sure.
No. Yeah. There's just a couple things from the trailers that give us hints of what's to come. Anyone who doesn't want to hear this, I will put a timestamp in the notes about when the section is over, and then we'll get back into, we'll get into our community feedback and other things. But just one thing from the trailer that we know is that this spiral May has on her head is there's another character who's going to be played by Jodie Turner-Smith called Mother Anasaya, who has also a spiral like that on her head, but then in the middle. So
I like it.
And Anasaya is the is Osha's last name.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
So they said they, I think they said they had two mothers, but, or they said they had mothers, plural. So maybe this is one of their literal mothers, or maybe she's a mother because it looks like she's like head witch of her
right,
sect.
Like a cult leader kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
And if, we talked about the, about Padawan John's theory about the spirals being connected to the Nihil, with the storm terminology, if that is the case, then this would be in the center of her forehead, like, and she would be the eye, you know, like a third eye. So
I like it.
I'm very, very much looking forward to meeting her, but we might meet her in a flashback because we do know we're going to get flashbacks. So people who are upset about losing Carrie Ann Moss, fear not. She will be back in flashback form with Saul and Kelnaka and Torben. So we're definitely, so we see young Torben because those who know the actor knows, know that he's actually quite young. So the fact that they hired a young actor and had him in this first scene play old makes me think that they are, he's mostly going to be seen as a younger right. version. So I'm wondering if we're
going
to
get like whole episodes in the past.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm wondering too. Like maybe the next episode is just all flashback.
Mm, I like that.
One other thing I noticed is that Indara, when she was fighting May in the opening scene of episode one, she had two dots next to her eye. But in the flashback episode, she only has one black dot next to her eye. So I don't know what that means, but just noticing it's there and visible.
Dots showing the passage of how many years or something? I don't know.
Or maybe it's a marker, you know, like Vernestra has the tattoos on her head because of Mary Allen's mark. Things that way. Maybe this is her version of that, marking something.
Well, when it's one dot, she's in the Matrix. And when it's two dots, she's in reality. Right.
That's how she knows. It's like in Inception with the top spinning. Also, okay, so we saw in the first episode, Baby May, after that poem they recite together, her eyes turn black. Torben's eyes do the same thing in the trailer. And then he collapsed. So does that say whatever is happening to Torben was happening to May? In like maybe because there's a lot of questions about this. Like, are Osha and May a force dyad? And if so, why does it seem like Osha is the only one who is getting these visions? Of course, we don't know. Maybe May is, although May seemed convinced Osha was dead, or maybe there's somebody controlling her somehow.
Yeah, if there's something, if there's somebody controlling her, then maybe they would think that it would be beneficial to have Osha fear the return of her sister or something like that, and not beneficial to let May know that her sister was alive because that would force her to confront her past.
Right. Yeah, and I just wanted to point out that there were scenes of people like, oh, Jackie's fighting with May in the trailer. These two characters aren't going to get along.
I'm sorry. I'll stop doing it eventually.
But yeah, just it is May. It's not Osha. So there's also, there are people online who are shipping Jackie and Osha.
Why?
See. I mean, it's, romance is okay.
Jackie is too young for Osha.
Well, aren't they both young?
I don't know.
I would rather they get along than be enemies. It, like, they can be besties, or I don't mind a little romance in Star Wars, but I don't know if Disney will dare to go there, you know?
Or well, that, and also, it's their Jedi, right? Like, that, well, I know Osha isn't and May isn't, but, you know, Jackie is a Padawan. She's supposed to have the whole no attachments deal. Unless you're Plo Koon. Oh, man.
Wouldn't it be funny if Jackie and her master had an unhealthy quote unquote attachment to the same person?
Ooh. All right. All right. That's interesting.
So the big confrontation in the woods in the trailer, by the way, I'm wondering if that is in flashback. So there's a scene where all like these different colored lightsabers light up and there's a red lightsaber spiraling through the darkness. So I'm wondering if that's in flashback just because Osha's flashbacks that we saw in the first episode were set in the woods.
Right. Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. And it's interesting because when she first had that flashback, I remember she said, Brendok? And I thought she was talking about a person.
Right.
And then later, of course, we learned that that's the name of the planet. So they did a good job of like Martin three-step revealing it.
Yeah. So I'm hoping maybe episode three will be a full flashback episode. But I'm signed up for
it. I feel like we're not ready for it yet.
Yeah, you think?
I think this is an episode 5 or 6 deal.
Right. Well, you know, I guess there has to be. The next episode does have to be about her trying to kill Kelnaka. And I feel like she's going to succeed. And that hurts my heart.
Yeah. Kelnaka's not long for this life.
Right. Oh. Yeah, the Wookiee. Oh, see, that was a good one.
See, I'm working on it. Working on it.
All right. Shall we see what the community thought about these first two episodes?
Absolutely.
So if anyone else wants to share their thoughts about future episodes, then please send in your feedback to, we have 2 emails you can send to. We have the swtimelinepodcast@gmail.com, and we also have starwars@thelorehounds.com. Whichever you send it to, it will get in our episode notes. We do record the day after the episode airs, the episode airs in Wednesday for most of the world. The episode airs in Wednesday for me. So when I talk about the day the episode airs, that's what I mean.
In the US, we're going to record Thursday morning. It'll come out after that. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Okay. So first feedback is from David, our fellow lorehound.
Hey, David.
He says, hey, yo, quick feedback. Glad you guys are loving the show, and it seems like the community is excited about this new title. Hopefully, I'll jump in on some later episodes, but for now, I just wanted to drop a quick note about the martial arts and the attack me with all your strength line. As a kid who grew up watching a lot of kung fu on late night TV, that line was right out of many of those movies. I'm not an expert, but as I understand, at the time in China's real and mythologized history, it was a thing for up-and-coming fighters to challenge more experienced masters. There was a strong desire for adherents of one style to want to test their styles against other styles. These engagements had their own rules of form and etiquette, not unlike how duels would have been fought at various times in European or Japanese history. Regardless of the historicity, that line really was a tone setter for me, and I'm sure anyone else who watched a lot of the same kind of TV back in that era. So, no, thank you, David. Yeah, like I said, not so much insight on the fighting side, so really appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, I used to watch a lot of kung fu movies with my grandpa because he was so into them, and it did feel right out of that. I totally agree with that. But the most interesting thing to me about that line is how not Sith-like it felt.
Right.
This you know, coming right out into the open and declaring that they want to fight, that's not the Sith at all.
No, you have a point. You have a point. There's something ritualized about it. Yeah, we need Marilyn to think about the ritual side of it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, she wrote in later, so that's okay.
Right, she did write in later, yeah. So, also, we heard from Jean, co-host on the Lorehounds Network, and my co-host for the MC Universe podcast episodes, which we're planning one for late June, by the way. But he just wanted us to make sure that we said, do not forget Yord. Don't trust Yord until further notice.
I'm with you, John. I said John. Oh, man. I'm saying my own name. I'm with you, John.
We are a Yord suspicious podcast, although I love the Yord Horde love. I hope that I'm wrong about Yord. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that he's just like a rule follower. And not something.
Yeah, I do think it's fun to have people who are, because that's a character type that we see in the Wheel of Time too, is like somebody who's really adhered to the rules. They're not necessarily bad. I mean, you brought up Galad, but I would say even someone where they do something, they do things that end up being bad.
Right.
But because they're rule followers, not because they're evil.
You brought up Galad, but I think there's other characters who will follow the rules to a fault, right. Even more to a fault than Galad.
Right, exactly. Yeah, now some people may make themselves look sinister just by, you know, trying too hard.
Yep.
Yep. So we also got an a voicemail from Dork of the Ninjas, or Michael, as you prefer to call him. Shall we take a listen?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey guys, just want to get my thoughts on the first two episodes of The Acolyte. So far, I'm enjoying the series overall. I think the mystery's intriguing, but I think that this series is probably going to be the biggest indictment of the Jedi Order that we've seen in the entirety of Star Wars so far. Of course, we've already gotten some stuff like that in the prequels and a little bit even in the sequel series, but this one, this series feels like the biggest, like, even more in the Clone Wars, like, showing the failings of the Jedi, showing that they are much more involved with politics than they should be. They're much more worried about keeping themselves in power than they should be. They're not worried about protecting people like they should. They're not worried about making sure the Force is in balance. They're more worried about, oh, we have to be in charge or the Force won't stay in balance. Feels like very much there was a cover-up that happened on that planet, that those four Jedi that Mei is targeting were involved in somehow, whether by incompetence or a situation of a cover-up entirely. It feels that even though she didn't fit, it feels like she wasn't a perfect fit, so she felt forced out. And I think that because of these feelings, we're going to see Mei and Osha either coming to, I think, a understanding of each other and not. I don't think the series is going to end with the Jedi coming out looking like the good guys in any way, shape, or form. Maybe to a small degree, but the way the series is playing right now, I do not feel like that. Yord feels like the biggest crony of, he feels like the worst kind of cop. Cap was very much like, we are the guys in charge, we're the ones who are right. Feels like a cop who pulls his gun on every occasion he can. How many times have you seen him go for his lightsaber before anything else, before any type of thing goes on? We've seen him grab his lightsabers at least four different times when no violence was called for. Nobody was giving him any true resistance, but he had that thing brandished like a cop who had a hair trigger who isn't disciplined enough. And I feel like this is just probably the best indictment of just showing these are the problems with the Jedi, and these are the kind of parallels to real life. Just my thoughts on the matter. Looking forward to hearing your guys' coverage.
Yeah, it's interesting that he brings up both Yord and also the fact that the Jedi Order has a history of pushing people out who don't achieve their, you know, fit in their perfect box in a way.
Right, right.
Because Yord is obviously
trying. This is what
trying,
a Jedi is.
Right. Yord is trying so hard to fit in that box.
Yeah. I mean, that's why his hair is so flattened to the side so that he can fit in the small box that they have him in.
It's so he looks jaunty, you know, just very calculatedly jaunty.
That's why he's so fit.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to fit into the box.
Yeah, exactly. So Xenos at Xenos Atron on Twitter said, I guess the nitpick I have of the show is really more of a Disney criticism, which is their weird obsession with shorter run times. It hurts the world building, in my humble opinion. Why is Andor the exception? What do you think about the runtime so far?
I've been good with the runtime. I think that these were appropriate length episodes. I don't know about you.
I mean, the second one, I was just disappointed that it was over because I want more, but I don't feel like I lost anything in that. You know, I don't feel like, oh, it didn't tell me enough or something. It's just, I'm just being greedy. I want more.
Yeah, and I don't know what the rest of the runtimes are going to be, but so far it felt like the episodes were as long as they needed to be to tell the discrete story they were trying to tell.
Right.
I don't think that, I'm hoping that it's true that they are just going as long as they think they need to go each episode. I think Stranger Things, you know, I think they went too far at some points, but I think they did do a really good thing of breaking the mold of these things have to be the same length every time.
Right, because that's the advantage of
streaming.
And then The
Last of Us ended up doing that too. Yeah, so,
yeah.
But even The Last of Us is on HBO too, so that was going on. I know they don't need to do ads with that with cable, but like when it's on TV. But yeah, I mean, The Last of Us was, you know, 45 minutes one episode, 90 minutes another episode. It's I think this is a good trend that we're seeing, is make the episode as long as you think it needs to go.
Right. Do you want to take the last two feedbacks?
Sure. Davey Mack writes in, thoroughly enjoyed this episode one podcast. Love too that you're dropping in snippets of Headland has said leading up to the show about politics and the bureaucracy of it all, which are things I like to dig into. I'm really glad that she is considering those things. Makes sense, though, given her previous work. I didn't listen to the preview cast just because I like going in knowing as little as possible. So it was nice to get those nuggets. Also, reprison ships. There's also one that was mostly droid operated by the New Republic in Mando season one. There was just one operative on board that ship, but the rest of the ship is run by droids. So there is precedent in Star Wars. Oh, and one last thing. When the show mentioned that the parasite is called a Dybbuk, I immediately thought of the Coen brothers' film A Serious Man, which features a Dybbuk in the opening scene. I'm not Jewish, so I don't have a deep knowledge on the subject, but I believe a Dybbuk in Jewish folklore is a malicious spirit. I don't think Headland herself is Jewish, but there was a theme around Jewish history and mythology in Russian Doll. She had to have gotten the name for this parasitic creature from Jewish mythology, right? See, I don't know about that. Now I got to look this up. I think that is...
Yeah, once he said that, like, the name, when it was said in the thing, it did sound familiar to me, but that's not an area of folklore I especially know much about, so...
A Dybbuk is a wandering spirit of a deceased person who has been unable to enter purgatory or paradise.
Okay. Okay.
So maybe because it's a purgatory thing, that's right. Why it's like this parasite that keeps you, it's possessing, right? It's a possessing mm-hmm. spirit. Interesting. I didn't know about all this. That's interesting.
And a good call out on the prison ship in Mando. I mean, I guess, yeah, they did have that one operative. Probably, I like to think it's because of this incident.
Yeah. It's like when the AI starts to take over too many jobs here, where they're like, all right, we need one human on each assembly line so that things don't get out of hand.
Right. Or in Beacon 23, one person in every beacon.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah, I also just wanted to say that for the Acolyte preview episode, I saved a couple things at the end, for the end of that episode, that I thought were bordering on spoilerish type of speculation. And those all ended up being revealed already. So basically about the twins, about Indara dying right away, and about the Sith code inherent in what Chimera was saying.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. So there's now nothing that can spoil you in that, which I like. I'm excited about that because that means that they are going to surprise me. It's not obvious. It's not...
Right. Yeah, it's cool when they do the marketing and they reveal some things if you want to know. They give you a taste of it, but it's all done in the first couple episodes. And that's what makes this a cool mystery, is that there's so many more layers to it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So our favorite Tolkien scholar, Marilyn Arpakila, wrote in two emails. So I guess I'll pause after the first one.
No, actually, I put them both together in this.
Oh, I know. But I know where the second one started because I read it. Hello, John and Alicia. She's Marilyn.
Yes.
Hello, John and Alicia. Interesting new series. They seem to be pitching it somewhat closer to the younger Star Wars fans, given the age of some of the major characters and the general themes of family, twins, masters, and coming of age questions. I like what I've seen so far, and I really like Master Soul. My first reaction is, I'm very sorry to lose Indara, yeah. In the bar fight. I liked her a lot. I hope we see more of her in flashbacks or as a Force ghost. And how do they figure that taking out a Jedi with a throwing knife is killing them without a weapon? Seems pretty weapon-like to me. Well, I guess that was answered too in episode two.
Right. It is a weapon. It doesn't count.
Yeah, it didn't count. She didn't get credit for that one. It was partial credit on the assignment.
Yeah. Poison is also a weapon, so it doesn't count either.
Right. Getting someone to poison themselves reminds me of the first episode of the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock series, which plot device it was inspired by other shows that I'm not remembering at the moment. May's Instant Sandstorm reminds me of a fantasy series in which the heir to the throne is receiving training on evading assassins, and the number one principle that is stated again and again is anything be a weapon. Yeah, I do know that Sherlock episode. I don't know if you watched Sherlock, Alicia.
I watched the first two seasons, I think.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Those were the good ones. I was also sorry that I had been spoiled about the whole twin thing. I would have liked that little bit of uncertainty in the first few minutes to try and sort out what was going on by myself. Oh, well, no real biggie, I suppose. May's first encounter with Master Torben reminds me of the story of a Buddhist monk sitting in meditation when a soldier burst into his room brandishing his gun. The monk continues to meditate until the soldier screams at him, "Don't you know that I can kill you?" The monk slowly raises his head and replies, "Don't you know I can let you?" According to the story, the soldier bows to the monk and goes away, and the monk continues to meditate. I found myself wondering, as they were all running around a planet in the middle of a snowstorm, if Jedi and their former Padawans have instant weather protection. Mm-hmm. It certainly was lousy weather to be out in for more than 5 minutes. Does anyone else think that May's supplier might also be her unknown master? Yes, we do. Yord won the first bad feeling about this prize. Alas, it seems as though they're going to use a picture of the Jedi Council as being stuck in some sort of groupthink mentality, choosing the way of the meeting or the way of quick follow-up and while the clues are still available. I gather that this is an explanation derived from the books or other sources, but it seems somewhat unimaginative to me somehow. I don't know, bureaucracy being the death of this system is definitely a very Star Wars thing.
Right. This is how freedom ends to thunderous applause.
That's a good line. I know people are like, oh, it's too on the nose. I'm like, everything in Star Wars is too on the nose. Get over it.
Right. No, that's a good line. That's one of the classics.
Yeah. Yeah. And poor Natalie Portman. Did you see the poor Natalie Portman, because fans are garbage, is what I'm saying.
Right.
But did you see the SNL bit from when they were doing the prequels, and they had somebody, I forgot who it was, but one of the cast members in the audience pretending to be like a crazy Star Wars fan, asking her a question about why Naboo couldn't do something. And she's like, well, you know, just because I'm in the movies doesn't mean I know everything. But the Trade Federation, this and that. And she just does this like really good, like lore based answer.
Yeah.
And it was very funny. It was a good opening bit.
She's a super smart cookie. I did feel bad for her. Like, I even knew someone that I knew so Natalie Portman, she went to Princeton around the same time I was in college, and our teams played each other in basketball. And so she came to my campus in Philadelphia, and one of the girls there was very drunk and just started the entire time harassing her, "Queen Amidala. Queen Amidala." I'm like, oh my God, leave this poor woman alone. She's just trying to be a college student.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's a shame. She deserves to have a normal life too.
Right. Anyway.
All right. Marilyn had a second email. She said something that I had intended to ask on the Timeline podcast, and now we'll ask here on this one. Since you raised it in the first episode breakdown, how are witches defined in the Star Wars universe? Are they the only magic users? And how is that different from force users? Are they only witches if they are women? Are they only witches if they originated on Dathomir? Is there any content in the definition of witches that might be viewed as spiritual or religious? Any clarification, explanation, and or discussion would be most appreciated. Looking forward to hearing what you folks have to say. All the best, Marilyn. Alicia, I'm going to kick that witch question to you, because you're the one obsessed with the witches.
Right. So, okay, so witches, as we know them so far, first of all, the magic is just the force. That's the only real quote unquote magic in this universe. They just use the force in a way that appears like magic from our viewpoint, from our own universe, the way we see other quote unquote witch characters. But they do call them witches. Sometimes you often see it being used as a derogatory term in universe. Mm-hmm. Like we saw in Ahsoka, people calling them, oh, witches, but they would call themselves Night Sisters. And indeed, up to this point, all witches that we know of in Star Wars lore have come from the planet of Dathomir. But of course, on Dathomir, there are these different sects. There are most famously the Night Sisters, but we also recently, in stuff that takes place later in the timeline, met the Mountain Clan, which are light side users. And now we have whatever this new sect is that's going to be in this show, but we know they seem to originate from the planet of Brendok, which is a new planet. It's not Dathomir. So I have as many questions as everybody else about what that's going to mean. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah. Cool. Witch lore abound.
Right. And as far as the spiritual and religious side, I would say that, yes, they all have their own sort of religion, their own spiritual practice. Definitely something tying their culture together and based around ritual and handing down certain practices.
Nice. Cool. I'm excited for more.
Yes, me too. Me too. Yeah. So we'll be back then next week in this feed with our episode 3 breakdown. And this time we're going to do it. We're going to drop it on the Supercast and Patreon feeds one day earlier. So that will be dropped there on Thursday. And then on Friday, it will be on the public feed. Now, as far as what else is going on in the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, obviously these weekly releases are going to be somewhere in the middle there. Mailbag episodes for the previous eras. So please do send in your feedback about, you know, Dawn of Jedi, Old Republic, High Republic up to this point, if you have that as well. And there's going to be at least a couple bonus episodes between John and I about how events in the show connect with things from previous shows and movies later in the timeline. So I've already started my notes. John, I don't know if you have things you want to add to that list as well.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited too. There's a lot to say. And probably right after The Acolyte is done, then we're going to do in the Canon Timeline podcast feed a Visions episode covering Sith of the Old Republic legends. And look in the Canon Timeline podcast episode notes for this, and you'll see which Visions episodes will be included in that.
A lot of cool stuff coming.
Yeah. I'll throw it over to you, John. You want to talk about what's going on in the Lore Hounds?
Yeah, we've been so busy lately that I've stopped doing things ahead. I've just been doing the week that we're currently in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So this week on the main feed, we've got House of the Dragon, Season 1, Episode 9 and 10, The Green Council and the Black Queen. That's our rewatch coverage. We have Doctor Who, Season 1, Episode 6, Dot and Bubble. That's you and me, Alicia. Really good episode. The Acolyte, obviously you're here. Mm-hmm. You did an episode on Planet of the Apes, parentheses, Kingdom of the...
Right. So half of it is talking about the original movies, and then half of it talking about the new movie.
Mm-hmm. And David did a podcast on Furiosa with Aaron from Radioactive Ramblings. He also did randomly a Patreon subscriber exclusive podcast covering solo covering the new trailer for the new Alien movie. So he's just going crazy over there. He's just doing everything. On Rings and Rituals, next week they're going to have Chapter 7, The Eye. So the second to last episode of Season 1 of The Rings of Power. On the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, you already did that. On Radioactive Ramblings, they have Fallout Lore Episode 3, God Bless the Enclave. I have no idea what that means, but if you like Fallout, you're going to like that. Properly Howard did an episode.
Backstory.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Properly Howard movie review. They did Axel F anticipation and listener feedback. They read a bunch of reviews and emails and stuff. It was a lot of fun, that podcast. And we'll shift us. You did a new episode on Beacon 23 this week, didn't you?
Yes, it dropped on at the end of the weekend. It was the wrap up for Season 2. And then coming up, I have on Monday, I'm going to be interviewing the showrunner, co-showrunner of the second season, Glenn Matsara. So watch out for that episode to hit Beacon 23 soon. And the Shift book breakdown is continuing. There's two more parts that will come out this month.
Very cool. All right. Well, that's the programming notes. Shall we thank the Lore Masters for the Lore Hounds Patreon and Supercast?
Yes, absolutely. So Supercast and Patreon members, they get early ad-free access. They get some extra episodes like, David dropping the Alien trailer breakdown and our second breakfast where we talk about what else we're doing and watching in our lives and also extra movie breakdowns, all that fun stuff. So we also have to thank people who have been Discord server boosters, which help us make the Discord run better, help us be able to do more technical things with it, help us be able to keep it cleaner and going smoothly. And those Discord server boosters are Gnarls, Aaron K, Tiller the Thriller, Dork of the Ninjas, Duve 71, Captain Gingy 56, Athena Angelea. Thank you very much. Do you want to shout out the lore masters, John?
Sure. I'm very practiced at this list. Samartian, Michael G, Michelle E, David W, Brian P, Nick W, SC, Peter OH, Bettina W, Adam S, Nancy M, Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H, Sarah L, Gareth C, Eric F, Matthew M, Sarah M, DJ Miwa, Andra B, Kwang Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T, Alex V, Aaron T, Sub Zero, Aaron K, Dally V, Mothership 61, Gnarls, Kathy W, and Adrian. Thank you all for all your service to the Lorehounds community. And yeah, this is going to be a good season.
All right. I can't wait to talk about episode 3 with you. Until then, for light and life, because that's a cool thing to say.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds and connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.